Welcome to The Market, sponsored by the CME Group. Hello, everyone. Along with Max Armstrong, I'm Orion Samuelson here for our weekly visit to take a look at markets from Wall Street to the cornfields of the Midwest. And we don't have any quiet weeks anymore in any of the marketplaces, it seems. Something going on to get traders' attention around the globe, and that's certainly been the case for this holiday-shortened trading week because of the Martin Luther King holiday observance on Monday to start this week off. But as we take a look at the closing day of the week in the marketplace, let's begin with Wall Street, because the stock market did move higher today, led by gains in consumer stocks, even though they were dealing with the possibility of a government shutdown before the market closed at the end of the day. And here's where we ended. The Dow Industrial Average up 54 points. And it closed at 26,071. That was one of the highlights of the week, the fact that the Dow roared past the 26,000 level. The S&P 500 gained a little more than 12 points today to end the week at 2810. And the NASDAQ composite added 40 points to end the week at 7336. For the week, the Dow up a little more than 1%. The S&P 500 up more than 75%. And the NASDAQ gained a little more than 1% today. Nine of the 11 major S&P sectors were higher, led by a 1.1% gain in the Consumer Staples Index. But a disappointing full-year profit forecast from IBM pushed its shares down 4%. That's the biggest single-day loss since July. But all in all, the market for the week did show strength once again after roaring through the 26,000 level. Now, we're into earnings report season. The big banks pretty well concluded their reports for the session, but a lot more of the regional banks will be reporting. And along with a full week of corporate results, markets will be focused on the most watched event of next week. That's where world leaders, policymakers, CEOs, and bankers will descend on the Swiss ski resort of Davos for the annual meeting of the World Economic Forum, meeting under the banner, Creating a Shared Future in a Fractured World, and President Donald Trump's decision to attend the meeting beginning on Tuesday will be in the spotlight. He is the first sitting U.S. president since Bill Clinton attended that event in 2000. After hitting a three-year high against the dollar, the strong euro likely to preoccupy global markets and European central bank policymakers in particular in the coming week, because the European Central Bank, whose governing council will meet on Thursday, announces its interest rate decision, followed by a news conference with ECB President Mario Draghi. Oh, and another big bank will be meeting in a two-day policy meeting next week. That will be the Bank of Japan, holding a two-day policy meeting ending on Tuesday. And that bank will be in the watch list for investors. Then, of course, there's a slew of Dow 30 companies reporting results in the coming week. And let's quickly go through some of them and what investors are expecting. Doesn't say they'll always get what they expect, but at least it's what they are expecting. And so, as we look at that list, we're looking at Caterpillar, expected to report higher profit and revenue on Thursday for the fourth quarter. On the same day, the maker of Scotch tape and Post-it notes, 3M Company, expected to post higher profit and revenue for the fourth quarter, helped by increased sales in emerging markets. coming amid renewed talks of a breakup. General Electric earnings on Wednesday will cap a tumultuous year in which the industrial giant replaced its CEO, overhauled its board, and announced thousands of layoffs to shore up its falling profits and stock price. Procter & Gamble Company, the world's biggest household products maker, expected to post a higher profit in the second quarter on Tuesday as innovative new products such as Tide Pods, Pampers Diaper Pants, and Febreze Beads continue to see a strong demand. Tuesday, Travelers Company slated to report a decline perhaps in fourth quarter profit, as the company is expected to record significant catastrophe losses from the recent California wildfires and the earlier hurricanes in other parts of the country. That will record significant catastrophe losses. And United Technologies, the maker of Pratt and Whitney engines, expected to report a flat fourth quarter profit on Wednesday, as it spends to speed up production of the engines that power the Airbus A320 Neojets and Bombardier's C-Series aircraft. And technology bellwethers Verizon Communications and Intel Corporation report its fourth quarter earnings on Tuesday and Thursday, respectively. Johnson & Johnson will kick off Big Pharma earnings on Tuesday, nearly a month after President Trump signed a new tax reform bill that is set to benefit the companies by bringing back billions of dollars held overseas. Abbott Laboratories expected to report strong fourth quarter earnings on Wednesday. Celgene Corporation scheduled to report fourth quarter and 2017 earnings on Thursday. And then Biogen, due to report results on Thursday, likely to post some strong fourth quarterly revenue report helped by sales of Spinraza, its treatment for spinal muscular atrophy. Intuitive Surgical, which previewed its fourth quarter results earlier this month, beating expectations for quarterly revenue, expected to report its full quarterly report on Thursday. And AbbVie will report its fourth quarter earnings on Friday, but with strong sales expected from flagship drugs, investors' attention will turn to updates on the drug maker's pipeline. And then some other data on gross domestic product, services PMI, and housing sales will be on tap for next week. Data on Friday expected to show the U.S. economy expanded at a 3% annual rate in the fourth quarter from 3.2% in the quarter ahead of that. Data on existing home sales and new home sales scheduled to be released on Wednesday and Thursday. Economists are forecasting that existing home sales dropped 1.9%, and new home sales are also expected to have dropped 7.2%. Ford Motor Company will release its fourth quarter results on Wednesday. The automaker had a great year selling high-margin trucks and pickups, but it was hurt by big recalls. Tuesday, United Airlines reports fourth quarter and full-year results following a disappointing third quarter review that startled investors and sent United shares dropping. Alaska Air Group is expected to report a lower fourth quarter profit on Thursday, and JetBlue Airways will post its results for the fourth quarter on the same day. Also on Thursday, Southwest Airlines expected to report higher fourth quarter revenue helped by improving travel demand in the United States. And Raytheon Company, that's the maker of the Tomahawk missile, expected to report higher fourth quarter profit and revenue on Thursday, thanks to increased demand for laser-guided bombs and missiles from the United States and its allies amid geopolitical uncertainty. Friday, Honeywell International will be reporting. The U.S. aircraft parts maker expected to report higher profit and revenue for the fourth quarter. And then turning to the energy industry, Baker Hughes, a GE company, will release its fourth quarter earnings on Wednesday. The oil field services provider expected to post a profit compared with a year ago loss as surging production sets U.S. oil output to reach 10 million barrels per day. Cable provider Comcast will release its fourth quarter results on Wednesday. The company said it would give $1,000 bonuses to more than 100,000 employees and invest $50 billion over the next 5 years in its infrastructure. And finally, home appliances maker Whirlpool Corporation expected to report an increase in revenue for the fourth quarter. So we're deep into the heart of earnings report season, and it will be a busy week on that front. Well, what about the grain market? Weather in Argentina beginning to act up again, impacting the soybean market. But Max Armstrong is going to sit down in our studio with David Hightower of the Hightower Reports, and we'll take a look at the agricultural commodity picture when we continue here on The Market, sponsored by the CME Group.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
David Hightower, the Hightower Report, joining us here this weekend in the studio. Well, we had a little bit of a soybean rally to start the year, but there's still not much to get real excited about, is there, David?
No, there's not. And the markets are vulnerable. That period of highest supply is probably not there yet. We see good weather in Brazil, but iffy weather in Argentina. So there are things to prop it up, but we're looking at big supplies in the markets, trying to factor that.
Is that our only hope for anything here, some kind of problem yet in the Argentine soybean crop?
Well, I think it is, and I'm kind of a demand guy, but demand doesn't stop a market on the way down. It supports it and eventually brings it out of the hole, and I think there's reason to be optimistic about what 2018 will bring later this year in prices.
I'll talk about that with you in a moment or two, as well as the demand side, but let's continue to talk about supply and look on toward plantings this spring. I noticed Farm Futures came out with their survey this past week saying their survey of some 900 farmers indicated corn and soybean acreage would be almost exactly what it was, what we planted in the spring of 2017, about 90.1 million acres of each. Were you surprised at that at all?
Well, it shifts the pendulum. I mean, we had them higher than that, and that's part of how we got to these lows. And I think the reasons behind why we might have a shift with the increased sorghum and cotton in some of those areas, that's significant. That's important. Maybe the numbers aren't significant, but at least we're not facing like an unrelenting wall of supply. So I think it's optimistic that they should see a shift a little bit.
Yeah, I'm trying to recall. I think grain sorghum, they indicated, would be up about 2%, cotton up about 5%, spring wheat up almost 7%, responding to the demand for that high-protein wheat, I guess.
Well, and a lot of sorghum's going to China, and they look like they're not going to relent at all on that particular pattern.
Quite often, though, we can see those farmer ideas shift even from this point, even from January on into the time of planting. Farmers do leave some leeway in there, do they not, to respond to the market if the market is giving them a signal at planting time?
Yeah, I think sometimes we anticipate that they'll change, but they're kind of set in their ways, and they have a preference for corn when they're near an ethanol plant, and it just at current levels, it would seem to favor soybeans. Oh, we'll have to see when we come down to the weather. I think the planting weather really decides that shift.
What else is looming out there? I mean, is there anything else that gives us cause to be somewhat optimistic?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I've traveled extensively in the last 2.5 months to all these buying locations, large feed conferences, even aquaculture. I mean, a lot of people may think that's a long way off, but you can look around to the actual consumption patterns, and you can see they're coming for U.S. Products. And secondly, we have a very weak dollar, so that's helping us be a little competitive on the world market.
So these were international destinations that you visited?
Correct. Bulgaria, Ukraine, China on two occasions, South Korea. So all those users, they're seeing, we understand that the commodity markets are driven by industrial demand, but we have this global synchronized growth, and the market's not giving credit for how that'll boost demand.
Global synchronized growth, it is there to stay. It's good, solid, rock solid. Will it continue to grow?
Absolutely. And a lot of this was pent up. I mean, we had this financial crisis for so many years. We have huge amounts of stimulus. And they're not going to remove it quickly. So I'm emboldened by the fact that the only thing that's getting overly optimistic is the stock market, because wages are starting to rise. We're starting to see record low unemployment levels in Germany and other areas. So there's signs it's sustainable.
Since you mentioned the stock market, do you think we're up in lofty territory where it's vulnerable now, 26,000 plus?
I don't. I think that the tax reform situation allowed a lot of losses to be claimed last year, and that's going to inordinately push up earnings, and the interest rates are still extremely low. So this global activity, you know, it doesn't just help U.S. companies.
China. I saw the story this week that the growth in China is, no, of course it's not 10% anymore. It's not even 8. It's not even 7. Just a shade shy of 7%. The government over there sending a signal, backing things down a bit, right, David?
Yeah, but, you know, I'd like to say, look at what they do other than what's posted or what they say. Because if you look at a long list of commodities and look at the January through November import pace, last year, we're still double digits above the prior year in many, many categories. So energy use is up, natural gas imports from the U.S., all those tell me that on the ground they're still moving forward and enough to help commodities.
Am I correct, though? USDA's projections were a little bit too optimistic in terms of soy exports from the U.S.?
They are, but I mean, when you consider what's happening in terms of DDGs, even the ethanol activity, the sorghum pull, you know, a lot of these are just, you can't just look at one component of the feed market.
The feed market, domestic feeding, I mean, we look at hog numbers, we look at cattle numbers, still strong demand there from the livestock sector.
Absolutely. And, you know, you got to take a look back and realize that the percentage of our total production that's being exported is escalating, and it's not going to relent.
Of meat you're talking about.
Exactly. Pork and beef. I actually see in my Asian travels, beef is now starting to appear and starting to get a foothold in terms of demand, and the higher price doesn't seem to discourage them.
This puts hog and cattle people into a little different sector now. They have to be a little more worried about what goes on around the world, the geopolitical scene, that grain farmers have worried about for years. Now, pork producers and beef producers have to have that on the radar screen too, don't they?
Exactly. And I mean, pork is a little bit more immune to the ebb and flow of the economy than beef. But you're going to see, again, Chinese currency very strong. Our pork looks attractive to them.
You mentioned the value of the dollar earlier. Do you see it staying at about this level? It was so strong after the election for many, many months. It has slipped back. What's your feeling?
Well, I think it's going to slip further. If, though, the Trump premium or the change in corporate environment in the U.S., we need stronger than expected growth. We need to see our momentum begin to pick up before they'll throw money into the U.S. dollar. And there's also looking as if there's an exodus out of some of the Treasury instruments, which is a big money, and that may drag the dollar down.
Crude oil?
Crude oil, you know, we have a fundamental tightening, not just a balancing, but if you look at stocks in the U.S., 65 million barrels below year-ago levels, running a high refinery rate, and we're still not building our supply with all that extra production from the Bakken area. So we're using it. We're producing a lot. We're using it, and we're starting to export at a fairly aggressive pace, almost 2 million barrels per day.
Exports of ethanol, I guess, shouldn't be forgotten either, right?
Well,
we're talking about energy.
Absolutely. And the clean air effort in both India and China means that the short-term stopgap gap is to import ethanol, and the longer term is to implement other biofuel expectations. So they've got plans, and by 2020, China wants to be producing as much ethanol as would require 1.5 billion bushels of corn.
Now, you've watched that Chinese situation for a long time. Is that attainable?
I think that they're a year and a half into it already. I think that they just now revealed it, and they don't reveal stuff until it's already been in motion. And I would not bet against them when it comes to these large infrastructure efforts.
Are they burning through that significant stockpile of their own of corn that they've had sitting around over there for a while?
They are, but they're also finding out that there's a lot less quality and usable corn within that supply. And in September, we started to see a few imports here and there. So I think it's not what we think, and I think that might be one of the bigger bullish surprises in 2018.
How about an overall thought on these corn and soybean prices and what we might see in the months ahead for that grower who maybe is still sitting around with quite a bit of old crop stored out there in the bins? First, soybeans. Will we make some more runs at $10 or better?
Well, I think that when you look at the size of the speculative short in the marketplace, we're not at a record in beans. We are at near record in corn. And so that kind of takes away some of that massive downside. And I feel 30, 40 cents down in beans and 15 cents down in corn is going to be the extent of it. Because, again, the markets are futures and they look forward, not backward. So I think they have a lot of that supply factored in there.
The producer will still have to stay on top of the marketings looking for that brief opportunity when the prices might spike, correct?
Yeah, and I mean, they have to be proactive this year. You have to, this is a year in which you have to take what's offered to you if it's offered to you. If you want to replace your cash sale with something in the marketplace like a call option, call premiums are very cheap on the exchange right now.
Getting ready for the day this morning, I was thinking, oh my goodness, this kind of has a feel of 1983. It's a doggone miserably cold in the wintertime. Relentless cold. Commodity prices are down. Spirits could be very down among growers, you would think. What have you sensed as you've been out there in the countryside? No, this isn't 1983, but what are growers telling you as you visit with them, David?
Well, I mean, they're obviously not necessarily scared, but close to it. I mean, they're depressed. I think the biggest problem is they think this is going to sustain for a long period of time. And I just don't believe that. If you look at a chart of crude oil and bean oil, they're almost exactly correlated. And so the oil market is the most oversupplied commodity market over the last 4 years, and it's corrected its balance sheet, so why can't grains?
Your insight is appreciated, sir. When you come by to visit with us, we always look forward to it. Thank you, David. David Hightower, the Hightower Report.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
Some big news in the commodity world, and I mean world, globally this late this week, as agricultural processing and trading company Archer Daniels Midland is reported to have proposed a takeover of Bunge Corporation. That according to the Wall Street Journal on Friday. And that could be a move that would set up a battle for Bunge with London-based rival Glencore. Bunge and other top grain traders who make money by buying, selling, storing, shipping, and trading crops are struggling to adapt to a world of oversupply. ADM said it does not comment on rumors or speculations, while Bunge was not immediately available for comment. But last year, Glencore sought a tie-up with grains trader Bunge in what was taken as the starting signal of a wave of consolidation and partnership in the industry. But Bunge said no to Glencore last year, and the two struck an agreement that temporarily prevents Glencore from making a hostile bid. The journal quoted unnamed sources saying that ADM had made the approach and that details were unclear. The scale of a tie-up between ADM and Bunge would raise bigger regulatory concerns than if Glencore acquired Bunge, according to a grain trading source. And one person said, that's like New York buying Chicago to me. You buy a whole basket of goodies and then you start dismantling. And of course, the companies that have been known forever as the A, B, C, D companies in global grain marketing, and that's ADM, Bunge, Cargill, and Louis Dreyfus. So this one is going to be watched because it will bring in justice departments and the global competition issues and probably all of the companies involved. So we'll keep an eye on that one. As was mentioned earlier by Max and David, Farm Futures released their annual survey indicating what farmers will be planting this year. And they aren't ready, farmers at least, to make major changes in corn and soybean rotations in 2018. As a matter of fact, in the survey of 945 producers taken late in December, it was interesting to note that the numbers on corn acres and soybean acres came out to be the same, 90.1 million acres for two of those crops. But in some of the wheat fields, soft red winter wheat, for example, there an expectation of a 6.6% increase in acreage, and white winter wheat up 8.8% in the survey, spring wheat up 6.7%, all wheat at 46.8 million acres up 1.8%, sorghum at 5.8 million acres up 2.4%, and cotton at 13.2 million up 5%. The results of the Farm Futures magazine annual survey of what farmers intend to plant. A couple of other things that happened late in the week impacting pork producers, and that is some new rules for hog processing. We'll go into those in more detail when we have more time to do it. And then finally, we take a look at where we're going to start trading the markets on Monday. Well, the February lean hog contract will start at $72.07 a hundredweight. February live cattle at $121.90 a hundredweight. Hardly any change in price there today. And January feeder cattle lost $1.67 today. They'll start trading Monday at $147.95. And then as we take a look at the grain market, where do we start Monday? Well, the March wheat contract will start the week trading at $4.22¾ after dropping 2 cents a bushel today. March corn will start the week at $3.52½ after gaining a penny a bushel today. And March soybeans, which had been showing the biggest gain of the three commodities, gained 2 cents at the end of the day, and they'll start trading at $9.77¼. But once again, weather in Argentina will certainly be watched because of lack of moisture in that South American country. The one other item that I briefly wanted to touch on, Arkansas. In a blow to manufacturers, Monsanto and BASF voted today to bar sprayings of the controversial weed killer after mid-April to protect farmers from potential crop damage. Arkansas will prohibit the use of herbicides based on a chemical known as dicamba, and that ban will be in place from April 16 to October 31st. That's the strictest state limits imposed on the product after it was linked to millions of acres of crop damage last year. A lot to watch. We hope you have a good week. Along with Max Armstrong, I'm Orion Samuelson. Thank you for joining us on The Markets, sponsored by the CME Group.